sometimes I forget to just be so grateful that I even exist and get to experience the world.
That's Ben Groener. And more than most people, Ben feels pretty lucky to be alive. Because in addition to the fact that his parents met entirely by chance, Ben's existence is the result of some pretty remarkable choices.
My brother and I were test tube babies. As my mom likes to say, it wasn't the fun way.
From Nashville Public Radio, PRX, and the Porch Writers Collective, I'm Joshua Moore, and this is Versify, a show where people tell their stories and we turn them into poetry.
When lovers meet on the brink of a breath, the edge of the water, they might choose to swallow, move forward, pass by, or they might exhale instead. They might say yes.
That's Nashville poet Megan Smith. In this episode, she speaks with Ben Groener about a secret that could have kept him and his twin brother from ever existing. We'll discover why Ben's parents chose to stay together, in spite of what that decision would ultimately cost. Their story, right after this.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to support this work, you can make a donation at WPLN.org.
Now, chance plays a pretty large role in the types of storytellers we meet for this podcast, but we also try to be intentional about where we decide to set up our mics. We try to engage with people who are exploring the world around them, which is why we partnered with a local gallery called Converge Nashville to stage poetry on demand in the middle of an art crawl. We're posted up on the first floor of the gallery, and there are gorgeous installations hanging on every wall. The garage door is up, letting both warm air and gallery viewers filter through the space, including Ben Groener, who's sitting down across from local poet, teacher, and circus performer, Megan Smith.
So I heard you have a story to tell.
It's really the story of my twin brother and myself.
Oh.
And how we came to exist. So taking it all the way back.
Ben grew up in the Bayside city of Corpus Christi, Texas, the same city where his parents met by happenstance some 25 years ago. They ran into each other at the local yacht club. Ben's mom was 29, his dad was 40, and the gap in age was just one of the reasons they made for an unlikely pair.
It just so happened she had forgotten her Pepsi at home and stopped in the yacht club to get a drink. And the bartender said, "Why don't you talk to that nice man there?" She wasn't really interested or in the mood, but long story short, she finally did have a conversation with him, and the rest is history.
What are your parents' names?
My mom's name is Martha.
Martha?
And my dad's name is Eddie.
What does your dad look like?
I think he's very handsome.
Oh, yeah. That's not...
Can you see where I got it from? No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I mean, he had bright blue eyes and a great hair.
But good looks alone weren't enough to convince Martha. After that first conversation, Eddie asked her out for a real date. But Martha was a bit hesitant. And when she finally did agree, it was on the conditions that it'd only be for lunch and that she would drive herself. They met at a little diner called Elmo's and wound up talking for an hour straight. When Martha looked up, she realized that the diner was suddenly full of people, but she hadn't noticed a single one walk in. Ben says they were pretty smitten with each other after that, and their relationship started moving quickly.
The way she describes it, it was just a whirlwind romance. They met in 1989, married in 90, had us in 91.
Martha and Eddie knew they wanted to have kids soon after getting married, but there were some factors they feared could make it difficult. Eddie had had some challenges with fertility, and so it was unclear whether or not they could conceive. Remarkably, anticipating that this might be an issue, Eddie had the foresight to freeze some of his sperm years earlier, and so the couple was able to try in vitro fertilization.
My brother and I were test tube babies. As my mom likes to say, it wasn't the fun way. But yeah, so in vitro fertilization, there were, I believe, 8 potential babies. Like, eight, you know, could have turned into something, but they didn't quite know yet.
Because it's been a few years since my last genetics course, I'll save you the overlong explainer. But long story short, Ben's mom had a total of 8 fertilized eggs implanted, and over the course of some weeks, the number of embryos started to decrease from 8 to 6 to 4 and eventually down to just 2.
And that is myself and my twin brother, Steven.
So has that shifted the way that you view parenthood or childbearing or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I would say that I think my mom did such an amazing job, like raising us by herself, raising 2 kids, having to work.
Megan pauses at this detail, raising us by herself. A look of confusion flashes across her face, and she motions to ask Ben a question.
Go ahead.
So your father, did he pass away?
I forgot to mention that. He did. So the timing of that was also fast. They met in 1989.
From the start of their relationship, Eddie had been hiding something from Martha. One night, she invited him out to dinner with her friends, and for the entire evening, something about him seemed off.
And she said that he had been acting just a little strange and wasn't his talkative self, and she could tell something was up. And he finally sat her down on the edge of a pier, looking out at the water, and said, "I have something to tell you."
Have you ever had a secret you feared that if you told could ruin the rest of your life?
I have cancer. She immediately could tell that he was scared that she would leave. He had already had leukemia for, I believe, 16 years when they met. And her response was, "I know," even though she didn't. She just wanted him to know in that moment, "I know."
Wow.
"And I'm still here."
So what do you think, because I'm assuming your mother sort of knew what was going to happen, what do you think was her drive or her initiative for making that choice?
Yes, she knew, but she just loved him so much that she would rather have had a short amount of time with him than nothing. And to be honest, I think they both thought they had a little bit more time. I think they both assumed they had more than 2 or 3 years.
But Eddie's cancer progressed rapidly, and Martha went from being a new bride to a caretaker in a matter of months. And as she struggled to look after her ailing husband, she still had to take care of their kids.
But she still says it was the best decision of her life.
Ben says he's always felt lucky that she made that choice. Lucky to have his mom and his twin brother, Steven. But growing up, he always had questions about his dad.
He died in 93.
Wow.
So we were not quite a year and a half old, which is sad because I have no memories of him. It was a little too young. I don't have any memories of him. But he also got to fulfill one of the greatest desires of his, and that was to be a dad and to be a father. So I love looking at pictures of us crawling all over him. And sometimes he has, an IV wrapped around his arm from his last hospital visit. But he wanted to be on the floor playing with us and, be in the midst of us as much as possible.
As he got older, Ben would ask his mom and relatives to tell him everything they could remember about Eddie. His favorite sport, what kind of music he liked, what he sounded like when he laughed. And then, when he was about 15, some of his father's old friends gave Ben a videotape that let him hear Eddie's voice for the very first time.
National Eddie Broadcasting System, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're not going to believe this, but with all the education that I thought I had, this is the third time that I've tried to make this tape. Now, the second time, I had forgotten to turn the mic on, and don't you know, nothing happened. There was no voice, no nothing, nothing on the tape. Boy, talk about education. Other than that, I wanted to say howdy and wish you the very, very best. Thanks again. Bye.
As Eddie's cancer became more aggressive, he started making videos specifically for Ben and Steven. In one of the last recordings, he said he still planned to fight the disease, but if he couldn't, he wanted the boys to hear him say he loved them.
So what do you, if you could give people sort of like a moral of this story about maybe romance or making those kinds of choices? It's a really tough choice to make.
Yeah. Well, that's so tough to...
I put you on the spot.
to wrap it up in something that's not cheesy.
Or just what do you want me to take away from it?
I think that love is always worth it. You know, even if it's hard and even if it doesn't last long and even if it costs a lot of sacrifice, which I guess real love will, existing purely because they loved each other.
After a quick break, we'll hear from both Ben and Megan about their reactions to that pretty heavy conversation, and we'll learn how Megan plans to take this painfully poignant love story and turn it into poetry. This is Versify.
In the 1960s, Rip Patton joined a movement of students protesting segregation, from sit-ins in Nashville to the freedom rides down to Mississippi, where he was thrown in prison.
If you don't stop singing, we're going to take your mattress. They opened the gate, we threw the mattresses out in the hallway. That didn't stop us from singing. Ain't gonna let no mattress turn me around.
I talked to Rip about being a disruptor and to dozens of other fascinating people about why they do what they do. Listen to these conversations on Movers and Thinkers from Nashville Public Radio. Find it on your podcasting app or at podcasts.wpln.org.
Stories like Ben's that involve revisiting the loss of a loved one can be especially difficult to share. And I asked Ben and Megan how the gravity of Ben's story impacted their conversation.
Seeing her facial expression when, you know, just a particularly sweet or moving bit of dialogue that really was shared in real life, when I got to relay that to her and see it affect her, that was really great.
It's the most exceptional love story I've heard probably ever. Just about the sacrifice and the choices that you make, like really when you know, and when it's worth it, it's worth it. And that really resonated with me.
It's a story that I love, and even though it is hard for many reasons, ultimately it's good, and it's filled with a lot of love and a lot of evidence of love.
Love can be really selfish sometimes, and I feel like this was an exceptional example of a selfless act that was really, because having kids was really important to him, even if he couldn't actually be there for their lives, you know, that was a choice he made, and she allowed him to have that.
Though Megan finished the poem that night, Ben wasn't able to come back to hear her read it. In fact, it took almost 2 months for us to get them back together. So Ben is hearing this poem for the very first time.
When we sat down, you had said this is about how sometimes I forget to be grateful. And that really stuck out to me. So I was just thinking about that concept of gratitude and like all the things that you could be grateful for given the circumstances. When lovers meet on the brink of a breath, the edge of the water, they might choose to swallow, move forward, pass by, or they might exhale instead. They might say yes. 1989 and watering lips were the asking, the curious pair unaware of how heavy the answer may be. Still, palms upturned, they said, hello. Maybe it was the ocean beneath the dock, roaring to unearth a miracle. Maybe the salt of Texas sweat or the curl of each other's mouths. What is certain, they were both hungry, both living and both dying, though one with tighter grip. It wasn't the fun way, It never is. These hearts, how they bend into each other, all of that tough and pulse and muscle. And now, when we say grace, we might try speaking up, using both lungs, what unlikely gifts they are. Thank goodness, Father, the foresight of his bones, so sure they would grow up tall and taller. Doubled flesh of his flesh, shining eyes and soft mouth smiling, even as he wilts into the earth. And thank goodness, Mother, belly of steel, how she always knew her body was meant for more than Pepsi or shallow waters, meant for more than mediocre romance. And we might say thank you for our blood, how it is warm and rushing, how these choices have been made for us. Though the love be deep and drowning, it is always worth it. The giving in, the saying yes.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Ben says he's amazed that Megan could so accurately capture the love story of two people she's never met.
You say things that are so true in there too. Some things that I think speak so much to how my mom and dad probably felt as they were meeting each other and falling in love. Of course, I'm only guessing at that too.
Sure.
But I think that's amazing how you could just hear a story and then get to the heart of it somehow.
I feel like you gave me the heart of it though. Like, I really do.
It just kind of urged me to imagine their love story again and think about him again. You know, to imagine him as this living, breathing human being and someone that you know, my mom felt passionately in love with. I don't know, that just seems like such an honor that you would even spend your time like that. Thank you so much for writing it.
Yeah, thank you. It's an awesome story.
Megan's poem helped Ben reimagine his father as a living, breathing being. And that's what good poetry can do. Let us see the people we've loved, the fathers we never knew, laugh and sing and breathe again. Versify is a production of Nashville Public Radio and The Porch, Nashville's nonprofit literary center. We'd like to give a special thanks to Converge Nashville, which hosted the event where this story was recorded. Editing for today's episode came from WPLN's Blake Farmer and Tony Gonzalez, with critical help from Anita Bug. Production for this episode came from me, Joshua Moore. The music was from Alex Mason, Poddington Bear, Kayla Drew, and Hawken, all found via the Free Music Archive. Versify is distributed by PRX. And tune in again to hear the beauty of how we can turn your life into poetry, one verse at a time.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.